Hey, I'm Talia Schlinger. You're listening to World Cafe, and that is Lizzo. She's my guest on the show today. That's the way her explosive major label debut album, 'Cause I Love You, begins. On the album, Lizzo shows off her writing, her rapping, her training as a classical flute player. But front and center, as you just heard, is her singing voice. Lizzo's career is on fire right now. She had barely stepped off a 5 a.m. flight when she swooped into World Cafe. We talked about the inspiration she drew from Aretha Franklin, what it was like to record with Prince, and her role, in her words, as a pioneer of the wave of body positivity that's happening right now. We also talked about the many years she spent hustling towards this moment. Our chat in a moment. It's Lizzo on World Cafe.
Again, I would do it for you all, my friend. Ready, baby? Will you be my man? Wanna put you on a plane, fly you out to wherever I am.
That's Lizzo with the title track from her major label debut, 'Cause I Love You. Lizzo, welcome back to World Cafe.
What's up, girl?
So today when we're talking, you're like the highest streaming artist on Spotify, like right now.
Just in this very moment, yes.
I know. It was like 12 hours ago or something that it happened. And you also got nominated alongside Nicki Minaj and Cardi B for Best Female Hip Hop Artist.
That's crazy.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. It takes a lot of energy. Good news takes a lot of energy. You know what I'm saying? So I'm a little depleted, but I think it's a good thing because my body is so much smarter than I am sometimes, and I know it's about to get filled back up tomorrow night at the show with some energy. So I'm taking it day by day, and I've been smelling the flowers, the roses. I've been in the present moment, and I'm just so glad I finally got to this point. It took me a long time to get to this point in my career, but it also took me a long time to get to this point in my life where I can actually appreciate the present moment. It all kind of synced up at the same time. So everything that happens, I'm just getting the full celebration of it.
Yeah, you sound so present on the album. Like, you sound ready to seize the exact moment that you're talking about now.
Yeah.
Tell me about singing on this record, because your voice is so front and center and so on it.
Yeah. Singing on this record, I sound different than I've ever sounded, because this voice, I think I was always kind of afraid of to record this voice. This is the voice that even when people were watching me perform back in the day in Minneapolis or even in Houston in my rock band, and I was screaming and singing and my rap songs, I would just start singing the rap lyrics. This is what people would get at my live shows, but I was always afraid to record like this because I didn't think it was good, or I didn't think it was clean, or I didn't think it was digestible. I don't know what it was, but I was very much afraid of my soul voice and my soul singing. And on this record, I was just confronted by a lot of people telling me, like, just sing, like, just do it. What's the worst that can happen? And I just let go of all of my fear and just sang from my heart. And I think at this time of my life, I needed to sing these songs. I'm rapping too, but there's a song to be sung right now in my life.
Is there a vocal take that you're thinking of now as you say that? Like, is there a track we should pull up?
I am thinking of 'Cause I Love You, of course, but also Jerome is a good one too.
Let's pull it up. So what's going on as you're singing this song? Like, what is the song that needed to be sung?
This is a song. This is a song that happened before. This is a song that was in the universe that was delivered to our doorstep. I did not premeditate this song. This song happened with Sam Harris and the X Ambassadors, and it was our first session, and he was like, I just feel like you need to sing a song that's like Jerome. And I was like, I don't know nobody named Jerome. And I was like, oh my God, yes I do, you psychic. And I started thinking about my experience with that man, and this song just kind of flowed out of us. Ooh,
sweet, bless your heart. Can't let a pretty face distract me from business, and God has my witness, your ugly ass won't either. I'm sorry.
I'm somewhere in between rapping and singing right here, and I thought it was really cool to hit the triplets because the song is in three, it's in 6/8, and so I was like, let's just go, let's hit some triplets and just sing some soul and see what happens. I don't know what was going through my mind. I thought it was hilarious while I was singing, because it's not a heartbreak song. It's kind of like just a situationship or like a quick flirtation or an Instagram boyfriend, you know, where y'all be talking on Instagram for a little bit and then you start texting, you go on like a date and then you just don't talk anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a song about that, you know, it's a song for people, the Tinder generation. And so it's really lighthearted. I'm even laughing on it a lot.
So that's kind of spooky that he like Jeromed you.
It's really strange because Sam is a very intuitive person, but also songwriter. And he would jump to conclusions about me that I had no idea. Like, he was even the person who was like, just go full Aretha. And I had been thinking about Aretha a lot when I was coming up on to making this album, because I was like, oh my God, this is my I've Never Loved a Man debut on Atlantic Records. We were the same age when these albums came out, and I just had all of this, like, not pressure, but I put a lot of expectations on myself to meet that, you know, record, because it was a goal of mine. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, just go full Aretha, just sing, you know, and he inspired me to have that intention in the studio. Like, if Aretha Franklin dropped a rap album in 2019, what would it sound like? And that was kind of our motto going in the studio all last year.
That's heavy. It's also like, I just watched the documentary about the making of Amazing Grace. I don't know if you saw that.
Everyone keeps telling me about it. I gotta see it.
You gotta see it. But the thing about it that I can't stop thinking about since watching it is that she is like, this is like Aretha at the peak of her expression, and she's drenched in sweat as they're shooting it and she's singing, and she does not care a lick. Like, she knows that there's cameras all over her, and she is using every fiber of her being to make the sounds that she needs to make. And there's something about like what you just said about sort of being afraid before to own your voice to its fullest. I think there's something about like claiming who you are that comes from reaching into that deep pocket.
Yeah, sweating while singing is something she and I have in common. But also, when I was making this album, Aretha was still with us physically, and I really wanted her to hear the album. So that was another huge, I was like, man, if I could just, you know, one of these days have one of them play her one of my songs or be able to sing it at an award show she'd be at. So that was something I was always looking forward to and excited about, and what really motivated me while making the record. I gotta see Amazing Grace, though.
Yeah, you gotta see it. Mm-hmm. So when she died, it must have hit you hard if you were...
Yeah. I was sad. And her, you know, her homegoing service was in Detroit, and that's where all my family is.
Right.
And I just felt, I felt the absence, you know, and it was really sad. But I'm also grateful that, you know, we existed in the same time as her. We all lived in the same time as Aretha, and that she could inspire me on this record, you know. I'm so glad that she was alive while inspiring me on this record, you know, because, you know, it's a whole different kind of energy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was so motivated, and now that she's gone, I'm just eternally motivated, you know, always trying to make her proud, even though we don't know each other. We never met, but I want to make her proud, like she's like my grandma or something.
Sure. There's another person I think it seems like eternally motivates you who passed, and it's Prince. You lived in Minneapolis,
yes,
for a while. So tell me a little bit about, first of all, why did you move to Minneapolis?
Well, I don't know.
You grew up, like, you were born in Detroit.
I was born
grew
in
up
Detroit,
in Houston.
Moved to Houston when I was 9. Went all the way up to college, and then I was in a rock band, and the rock band broke up. And I was really my family had already moved away. They moved to Denver. And my father passed away, and so I had no money, I had no job except for my rock band. I really didn't have nowhere to stay. I was, you know, sleeping on people's couches. And this guy, this producer in Minneapolis, said, if you come to Minneapolis, I'll let you stay with, you know, me while you get yourself together. And that was the only option I had, and so I just went.
And then you're there.
Yeah, my mom was like, you can always come back in a year, give it a year.
Really?
That's what she said to me.
She wanted you to give it. Why do you think she wanted you to give it a year?
Just because my musical career had been so marginal, I guess. It was just wasn't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going anywhere, you know. Like, and she came to one of my rock shows, and there was no one in the crowd. And when I say no one, I mean we played an empty bar.
Wow.
So that was the only show she had ever seen of mine at that point.
What pushed you through at that point? Like, what were you doing it for at that time, or who were you doing it for?
I was doing it for my dad, who
Why?
Had passed away, because my dad was he motivated me to pursue music my whole life. Like, his dream, and I'm sure everyone in my family's dream, but, you know, when I was younger, I knew his dream was to do music, and he would always make me practice the flute, and he would always, like, encourage me to play the flute. When I thought the flute was a very annoying, nerdy instrument, he made me feel cool about it and was like, would let me play for his friends and stuff. And he wanted me to sing the national anthem and at baseball games. Like, that was his goal for me. And he was like, and then you're going to play the flute and then you're going to sing, you know.
At baseball games.
Like, you know, at the games, at
right.
football games and stuff. He
sure.
thought that was just like a big deal to sing the national anthem at games. And he always wanted me to play the flute and sing. And even when I wasn't a singer, he was like, you got to learn how to sing. You know, I just wanted him to be proud of me.
Lizzo's here with me on World Cafe. So a few years after that, then you find yourself like in the studio with Prince, right? This can't be long. It can't be long after that, right? Because you moved to Minneapolis.
Honestly, that's what I'm saying. Right after that.
So that's wild. I'm going to pull up the song that you did with him.
Boy Trouble.
Yeah, Boy mm-hmm. Trouble. And that's on Plectrum Electrum, mm-hmm. right? 2014. So help us find where you are in this song.
I'm towards the second half.
Okay.
So you gotta slide all the way through.
Let's slide and then tell me a little bit about this experience.
Let's find it.
Yeah.
There it is. Started it a little earlier. When you look into my eyes, it look like you just seen a phantom. Take a minute, collect it, recognize it, and respect it. You running around in these circles, wondering if oh my God, I used to rap so fast. I used to be like, it's gotta be the fastest rapper ever. Shy guy. I was like, I'm gonna give Prince everything. I'm gonna give him bars, punchlines, harmonies. I gave him a squall. This is a funk moment. This little funk moment, I was like, he gonna like this. So there's a squall I do at the end right here. Here it comes. And I did it. It was one of my ad-libs. And I was like, man, that was embarrassing. But I had to go for it.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, you know, they probably gonna take that off the song. And we didn't know what was gonna happen because my best friend Sophia Aris is also on, she's my DJ too. She's also rapping, she's the first rapper on the song. And so we recorded that in 2012, I think. It came out in 2013, it came out in 2014.
Uh-huh.
And I remember being like, what if it never comes out? And also, what if it changes completely? Because Paisley Park hit us up and was like, Prince just did a remix of it before it even came out. And it was this club remix that he was playing all over the world in different clubs. And it was just Sophia Aris's verse with like this club beat. And I was like, dang, Prince took me off the song, man. He took me off. And then like a few months later, they were like, it's coming out. How do you want to be credited on his album? We were like, what? And then when I listened to it, they left everything in. They left my squall in. They left, and that really validated me, because when he first gave us the song, he said, treat this as if it's your song. Like, it's not my song. It's your song, because we were a rap collective, so we were just putting out little, you know, rappity rap, and I was like, okay, we about to be rappity rap then, because, you know, you have that fear of, like, wanting to fit into an icon instead of being an icon yourself, you know. Oh, and I've experienced that a lot, you know. I experienced it even with Missy. Like, I have moments where I'm just like, it's you, you're the icon, and I'm just in awe, and I'm just gonna support your iconoclasticism. And they're like, no, you're an icon as well. And Prince was the first person to really make me feel validated as an artist when I heard that track, and I got paid my first big check ever. Wow. Thank you, Prince, for my laptop. And it validated me as an artist.
Yeah, Missy is Missy Elliott, who's on the track Tempo. Yeah. I have to say, as I was listening through, I didn't look at the track list. I didn't read anything before I listened to your album for the first time.
Okay.
And as I was listening through, I got that same feeling. Missy's So Addictive, which came out in 2001 when I was 15, was like such an important album to me. And as I was listening to 'Cause I Love You for the first time, I had that feeling. That, like, same feeling. And then, oh, I was, wow, like, is this Miss? Like, she's reminding me so much of Missy. And then I was like, wait. Is that
it's Missy?
And then on track 7 on Tempo, it's Missy. Like,
yeah,
that'd be crazy too.
Yeah, it was, and it is, because more so than any artist, she is the artist that I had always dreamed of working with, meeting, shaking her hand, sharing a stage. Her knowing I existed, that was the artist. You know, that person that you're like, I just wish they knew I existed. You know, she was someone. I would watch all her music videos. I would listen to all her songs. All her songs were so, every song is so good.
Yeah.
Every song she puts out to this day is so good. She puts her heart into everything that she does. And, you know, she just made me believe I could fly. You know, I can't even believe that I have a song with her, and that, you know, she likes me, you know, and that we're friends, and that she can call me whenever she won't. Like, that's crazy to me.
And that you're right there. Like,
right there.
You're right there.
Ready to receive that call.
You've owned it, earned it. Yeah. And that's the thing, like, being ready to receive what's coming to you.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
We have to talk about Juice.
Okay.
Let's play it. Like, you love this song. Like, you can't help but sing it now as we're sitting here.
I love my music.
You love this song. Can you tell me just, like, a little bit about how this song came together?
I did this with Ricky Reed, the producer I've done Coconut Oil with. So I had been working with him for a long time.
That was your 2016 EP. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So everything we were doing was cute, but no cigar. And there's this amazing songwriter who I met, and it's very hard to write with me. Like, I'm such a specific kind of artist, and I'm such a specific songwriter, that when you put someone in the room with me to collaborate, or, like, no one can just, like, send me a song and be like, I wrote this for you, doesn't work, because I'll be like, nope, I'd have to fix this, I'd have to change that. But I found this amazing person, his name is Teron Thomas, and he saw who I was going to be instead of seeing me right now.
Yeah.
I'm so present, and I can write about me. I can write retroactively about me. But to see the future me, to see the icon, or to see the superstar, I couldn't see that in me. And he did the first time we met. So he was in the room, and Ricky was in the room, and we had been playing around with a lot of ideas. And I remember just looking at them and I was like, yo, you write his songs and you produce his songs. I need y'all to pull out a track right now that you just know is a certified hit from the jump. And then Ricky pulled up the guitar track to Juice, and it was that right there. It was literally this. Maybe the drums are a little beefier, but that's it. Hmm. And I remember we were like, oh, wow. Like, that's, like, immediately it was emotional. That was the first thing I texted him. After we did the demo and I went home, he texted me the demo, and I responded. I said, emotional. Like, that's how it makes you feel. But and anyway, moving forward, Teron is such a genius. He was like, you just need to be talking. Talk some smack, you know? And I feel like on this song, it was the first time I was ever just kind of like it was full rap swag without even rapping. Mm. And we wanted to do, okay, so here was the direct reference. Do you remember from Blues Brothers, Aretha Franklin and the three women, her backup singers, when it was like, you better think about what you're trying to do to me. Yeah. We watched that. He was like, oh my God, this is a reference. Like, we visualized me and my girls and just being like, we got the juice and you don't. Actually, just kidding. We all got the juice. Like, I don't know. We were just being like silly. And he was even like, bring some girls in here. So I called my best friends. They all just happened to be in town and they came in and hopped on the track. It was just like this, the party that the song evolves into is how the song was made. Mm. And it all started with just being like, yo, you know, if you're shining, all your girls are going to shine, and vice versa. When your girls are shining, you're shining. And that's just such a beautiful thing. Let's celebrate that, you know, with this song.
So if the writing of that song was sort of the genesis of, like, future you, like this person who is fully realized. Mm-hmm. If we fast forward to the cover of this album where you're sitting and you're not wearing any clothes and you're looking right at the camera kind of like, what? Like with this just amazingly direct look in your eyes. Mm-hmm. How did you end up, like, why did you want to not be wearing any clothes on the cover of your album?
Well, I don't know if it was intentional. We had a whole other shoot. And those photos are actually now coming out. There's like pictures of me with like a big pink hat that are going around the internet. And that was from our original cover shoot and Juice shoot. But this shoot, I think we had over-styled the first one with the hat and the baby hairs and the jewels. And so on this one, the second shoot, the reshoot, we just wanted to like start with less and then build up. So funny thing, we actually had wardrobe on set, but we were like, let's just start with nothing and build up. But we just ended up never building up because the photos were just really incredible. And the shot that you see is one of the first shots of the day that I was actually not in love with. I wasn't, not that specific shot, but I wasn't in love with the first setup. I was like, all right, when we gonna get some diamonds in here? When we gonna change my hair up? I need big hair, you know? Like, I was very... I was like, nah, this ain't it. But I remember I had been on the ground doing all these poses, and I had leaned forward to kind of get, like, relaxed for a second to, because, you know, my back be hurting because I be tooting it up and stuff, tooting my butt up. And it hurt, so I was, like, relaxed at my back. And so then Luke Guilford, the photographer, took that photo. And so that's just me kind of looking, like, in my most comfortable naked state. And I remember I was like, all right, let's go on to the next setup, because I really think there's like photos of me covered in glitter naked. I was like, I think those gonna be the ones. And my creative director and even my management team, they were like, nah, we already know. And I was like, which ones? They were like, that black background with the long hair. I was like, whatever. And then we looked back at those photos and it was just incredible. I think it was meant to be, because we didn't try, and it wasn't even something that I thought would happen. But this photo just represents my vulnerability and strength, and that is what this album is all about.
Were you always as comfortable with your body as you are right now?
I mean, no, and I'm still not every day as comfortable as the day before, you know? I think that at a certain point, I kind of realized that my body wasn't going to change unless I did something drastic, which I didn't have money. When I started discovering my self-love and trying to be more positive about my body, this was like 10 years ago. And I was like broke, and I was like, I have no plastic surgery options. There's no crazy dieting options. I've been big my whole life. So just like, just deal with it. Just accept your body. And I would not suggest that to other people. This is just my own journey. I had to just like really face myself in the mirror. And I'm like, so what's gonna happen? Are you just gonna turn into a different person? You're just gonna wake up with a different body tomorrow? Like, no, you're not. So like, what are you gonna do about it? I'm sick of being unhappy with this. And I made a decision that I would eventually be happy about it. And it took a long time, and it's still happening. I'm still working on it every day. But 10 years later, you know, I have a healthier relationship with my body.
Yeah. Self-love and self-acceptance is something that also gets so commodified now, I think. Like, businesses will try and sell you self-love,
yeah,
or it becomes a tool. We just have a couple minutes left together, but I just think it's so interesting that now you're sort of in this space where people are looking to you for that.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of pressure. Is it?
Well,
or is
no,
it?
You know what? I don't let them get that from me. I say this on stage to everybody. I say, I'm not going to sell you the commercialized self-love. I'm not going to sell you the hashtag self-care. I'm not into that. Like, I feel a responsibility as a pioneer in this wave of body positivity to push the narrative further. Now that everyone's caught up and now that it's mainstream, like, the pioneers have a responsibility to take it further. And I'm taking it even further with self-actualization and how to use our emotions constructively to better deepen our relationship with self-love and ourselves. Because now they're just like, oh my God, hashtag self-love, I'm having such a bad day. But then they're just like, I'm not even gonna get into it, but they're just saying like self-care is all like facials and mimosas, and there are people using the term body positivity but still posting like really gorgeous glamour shots. And I get it. That's fine. It's everyone deserves to speak on it. Everyone deserves to have ownership of their body positivity. But I'm not just going to settle for that anymore. And I think that there is something to emotions and vulnerability and expressing those emotions in a more vulnerable way on yourself and to yourself that I think we haven't tapped into. And I think there's also something to realizing that bad days are still self-loving days, and you can still practice self-care on bad days, because these are the days that aren't really glamorized or talked about or commercialized yet, you know. And emotional disorders, like talking about things like that, like it gets real nitty and gritty, and it gets real deep and it gets real dark. And I think that that's the next step to talking about self-love in this mainstream space.
Yeah, on your worst days, is it still like you gotta find that self-love?
I mean, yeah, I'm not having the best emotional, I'm not experiencing my best emotional self right now. I'm definitely chemically drained. Like, there was a day where I knew I just had no serotonin because I had just been pushed so much and I wasn't sleeping enough. It's very science-based with me too, mm-hmm, sometimes. I'll be like, I'm not using my melatonin enough to produce serotonin. It's the same, mm-hmm, channel. So I'm not happy today because I got 1.5 hours of sleep and had to get on a plane. And so I'm tallying it up. So I haven't really actually felt like myself. I'm getting all these amazing accolades. All these amazing things are happening in my career. But I don't feel like myself, and I don't feel happy all the time right now. And I think that as somebody who is very self-loving and I have self-care always at the bottom of all of my darkness or all of my episodes or whatever, self-loathing, it is interesting to me and fascinating to me learning how to navigate this new space and also how to communicate it. So I'm having therapy on stage every night, mm-hmm, on this tour, because that is just what my spirit is telling me to do. I'm having conversations that are different. They vary every single night with depending on the crowd that I'm talking to, and they're having therapy back at me. And it's a very extremely therapeutic exchange that is just reciprocal. And by the end of the show, I always feel better. By the beginning of the show, I feel amazing because their energy in that room, everyone just wants to be happy and everyone just is so happy to be there and they're just exploding with love. So that all already is just like a shot of, you know, endorphins and serotonin and love and goodness. But by the end of it, I feel like I've got something off of my chest and the people in the audience do too.
Well, I have to let you go because you have such a busy schedule right now.
Yeah.
And we're at the end of our time. I would sit and talk to you forever about this. But I'm so, and I recognize that that's draining too, that you have to sit and have these conversations and all of that.
Yeah, but you know, I'm always going to be honest. And it's really nice that, you know, I mean, listen, I'm glad that you want to have honest conversations. I can't just sit in every room and be like, you heard this joke? Like, every person. No, I don't like small talk. And people who ask me how I'm doing always get the real answer. So, you know, that is another reason why this isn't destroying me, because I'm not being fake. I think if I had to be fake during all this press and all of this work, I think that it would eat me alive. But I'm just a very TMI kind of girl, and I'm just keeping it 100 with everybody. I'm tired today, but I'm glad we had this conversation.
I'm so glad that you exist. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to go out on a song. Do you mind if we do Soulmate? Or do you want to pick
one? Oh my God, that's my favorite song.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay.
Dang, we ain't even talk about Soulmate.
Ah, Lizzo, thank you so much.
Thank you.
True story. No glory. Let's go.
Yeah, the old me used to love a Gemini. Like a threesome, messing with them every night. A lot of two-faced people show me both sides. So I figured out I gotta be my own type. They used to say to get a man, you had to know how to look. They used to say to keep a man, you had to know how to cook. But I'm solo and soho, sipping soju in Malibu. It's not me, myself, kind of attitude.
Marry me one day. True love ain't something you can buy yourself. True love finally happens when you buy yourself. So if you buy yourself, then go and buy yourself another round from the bottle on the higher shelf.
Oh, Lizzo, that was such a thrill. Thank you, Lizzo, for making time in your crazy busy schedule to come in here and talk to us here at World Cafe. That is Soulmate from Lizzo's album, 'Cause I Love You. Everyone be your own soulmate. What a great idea. What a great idea. Thanks to our World Cafe producer, John Myers, for all his work on this session. Thanks to Dan Reed, who books our talent on the show. Ellen Oplinger, our production assistant. Thanks to Kaleo, who's with me in studio. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Also, thanks to Lizzo's whole team for making this happen. Our executive producer, Bruce Warren. I'm Talia Schlanger, and I think you should listen to 'Cause I Love You start to finish. Go do it. This is World Cafe from NPR.